The Economist Magazine for February 7th through the 13th, 2026, on the cover. Musk's AI in the sky. Gag the press, get more graft. A new nuclear reality. The Mandelson scandal. And the cover story is a snake with dollar signs all over it saying, "The dangerous dollar." On the cover, page 3. Holders of American assets must get used to a weaker and more volatile currency. Leader, page 11. Why the greenback may have much further to fall, page 62. There's a lot more to emerging markets than sell America. Buttonwood, page 67. Untangling the ideas of Donald Trump's Fed nominee. Free exchange. Page 68. Musk's AI in the sky. The world's richest man is betting the future of his business empire on artificial intelligence. Page 55. Gag the press, get more graft. Curbs on media freedom are unleashing corruption around the world. Leader, page 12. As democracies use autocratic tools to muzzle journalism, financial impropriety thrives. Briefing, page 18. A new nuclear reality. Mitigating the risks of proliferation. Leader, page 13. A lapsed treaty with Russia may spur an American arms race with China. Page 52. Can Europe do nuclear deterrence without America? Page 44. The Mandelson scandal. It removes a main reason for the prime minister to stay. Bagehot, page 51. Bonfire of the elites, Trumpeter, page 61. We will also read this week The World This Week, a summary of political and business news from page 6. Leaders, page 11, financial markets, the dangerous dollar, page 12, global journalism, nothing to see here. 13, nuclear deterrence, opening Pandora's box. 13, scientific research, the evolution of invertebrates. 14, the new Bangladesh, only half built. We'll also read the letters from letter section on page 16. By invitation from page 17, Amir Hossein, Gangabakish on how to topple Iran's Ayatollahs. Briefing, press freedom, grifters with gags, page 18. And we'll also be doing the United States section from page 21. The right to die, 22. Golden State versus Golden Geese, 23. Justice or just ice, 24. Voting rights and wrongs, 25. Claire Monsters, Inc. And 26. Lexington. Thank God for millennia. And if time is available, we'll finish other articles for this week. The Economist magazine continues The World This Week Politics, page 6. America and Iran agreed to hold talks in Oman on February 6th. Donald Trump said Iran had to do several things to avoid military action. Do a deal on its nuclear program, stop killing protesters, and stop arming proxy militias. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, said there would be a regional war if America attacked his country. America's military buildup in the Middle East continues. It shot down a drone it said was aggressively approaching the USS Abraham Lincoln, an aircraft carrier now in the Arabian Sea. Israel struck at Palestinian militants after its troops were shot at near the armistice line in Gaza. Health officials in the Strip said over 20 people were killed. This came soon after Israel reopened the Rafah border checkpoint with Egypt, though only a handful of people crossed over. The leader of South Africa's second largest party is to step down. The decision by John Steenhuisen of the Liberal Democratic Alliance could destabilize the coalition between his party and the African National Congress, just as the economic reforms the government has pursued since 2024 are starting to pay off. America said it sent several military officers to Nigeria to augment security cooperation. The latest sign that relations between the two countries appear to be improving. In December, America carried out airstrikes in northern Nigeria against what it said were targets associated with Islamic State, a jihadist group. Meanwhile, gunmen suspected to be Islamists attacked two villages in the western state of Kwara. Reports vary on the death toll, but some say at least 170 people were killed. After months of refusing requests to do so, Bill and Hillary Clinton agreed to testify to Congress about their connection with Jeffrey Epstein and will appear before a committee on February 26th and February 27th. Excuse me. Congress had threatened to hold them in contempt. The Clintons' change of heart came after the Justice Department released more files on the sex offender. The end for Mandy. In Britain, the Epstein files revealed Peter Mandelson, a prominent Labour politician, had passed sensitive information to Epstein during the financial crash of 2007 through 9. The police began an investigation and Lord Mendelssohn resigned from the House of Lords. Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, backed down amid a revolt from his own Labour MPs and said he would now release all the documents that informed his decisions to appoint Lord Mendelssohn as ambassador to America before sacking him last year. Tom Homan, Mr. Trump's border czar, said that 700 federal immigration agents would be immediately withdrawn from Minneapolis. Mr. Homan said the agents could be pulled back because local authorities were cooperating with the federal operation. Some 2,000 agents will remain. Mr. Homan said 158 protesters have been arrested and that security personnel would remain to protect the immigration officers as they conduct their duties. The Supreme Court denied a Republican request to block a new congressional map in California that has been designed to give the Democrats a handful of new seats. The map was approved by voters in a ballot measure last year. America and India reached agreement on a trade deal that will lower American reciprocal tariffs on Indian goods from 50% to 18%. Mr. Trump raised the duties last year because of India's purchases of Russian oil. But the president said India had agreed to halt them and would buy more American oil, and possibly Venezuelan oil, too. India did not comment. Details of the pact are sketchy, but Narendra Modi, the Indian prime minister, described it as a wonderful announcement. In Pakistan, the Balochistan Liberation Army carried out a number of gun and grenade attacks, including on schools and banks, that officials said killed 36 civilians and 22 security personnel. The BLA claimed it had killed dozens of soldiers. Pakistani security forces killed 216 militants during a week-long targeted operation. The rebels have stepped up their activities in recent years. China executed 11 people for running telecom fraud and gambling operations worth $1.4 billion in Myanmar, and for killing 14 Chinese citizens involved in these schemes. It has been stepping up cooperation with countries in Southeast Asia to end such crime. Russian and Ukrainian negotiators held a second round of talks, backed by America in Abu Dhabi. Russia resumed its attack on the Ukrainian energy infrastructure after America persuaded the Kremlin to briefly suspend such attacks during a spell of extremely cold weather. 12 miners were killed when a Russian drone struck their bus in Dniprotovsk region. After months of squabbling and several attempts by far-left and far-right parties to bring down the government, with votes of no confidence, the French Parliament at last passed a budget for 2026. It is a big relief for the center-right government and Sebastien Lecornu, the prime minister. The budget includes a big boost in defense spending, with Emmanuel Macron, the president, had called for to tackle the threat from Russia. China described the decision by Panama's Supreme Court to annul the contract that allows C.K. Hutchinson, a conglomerate in Hong Kong, to operate in the Panama Canal as absurd and warned of heavy prices to pay. The ruling was seen as a victory for the Trump administration, which wants to limit Chinese operations in the vital waterway. C.K. Hutchinson had agreed to sell its ports anyway. It has started an arbitration process against the judgment. Laura Fernandez won Costa Rica's presidential election for the governing Conservative Party. Ms. Fernandez promised to continue the crackdown on crime started by Rodrigo Chavez, her predecessor and ally, whose term in office was limited. She wants to open a maximum security prison to house gang members and says she will declare a state of emergency in high crime areas. Warming to the petro state. Colombia's left president, Gustavo Petro, visited Donald Trump at the White House in an effort to heal their acrimonious relationship. Mr. Trump has called Mr. Petro a drug trafficking leader, and Mr. Petro has likened America's immigration policies to those of the Nazis. The pair discussed the fight against drug gangs and Venezuela's oil exports. Mr. Trump described their meeting as terrific, and Mr. Petro said it was constructive. he left holding a MAGA hat. The World This Week Business, page 7. Donald Trump nominated Kevin Warsh to replace Jerome Powell as chairman of the Federal Reserve when he steps down in May. Mr. Warsh was on the Fed's Board of Governors during the global financial crash of 2007 through 9 and acted as a channel between Ben Bernanke, the chairman at the time, and Wall Street. Once considered to be a hawk, Mr. Warsh has been a regular critic of the Fed of late and is expected to push for interest rate cuts, which Mr. Trump favors. The president said he had not asked Mr. Warsh whether he would reduce rates, as he wants to keep him nice and pure. Despite his call for rate cuts, investors think Mr. Warsh will also be tough on inflation, which in part explained the sell-off in gold and other haven assets. Gold prices recorded their steepest one-day drops in 40 years, and silver fell the most since 1980. But investors took advantage of lower prices and piled into precious metals again, rallying the market. The dollar rebounded from its four-year low against a basket of currencies, though interest rate cuts would probably cause the currency to resume its slide. Amid increasing inflationary pressures, Australia's central bank raised interest rates for the first time in 2 years, taking its key rate to 3.85%. The Reserve Bank of Australia and the Bank of Japan are the only two central banks in big developed economies to have begun a new round of monetary tightening. The disruptive force of AI took its toll on the share prices of companies specializing in software, marketing, and data and analytics. The stocks fell sharply after Anthropic released plugins for its Claude Cowork AI agent, which automates many routine tasks. The sell-off spread to the wider tech sector. AMD's stock plunged by 17% after the chipmaker's forecast failed to match Wall Street's lofty expectations. Elon Musk merged SpaceX with XAI to further his ambition of launching data centers into space. Mr. Musk hopes his SpaceX rockets will one day carry satellites to create data centers that run on XAI technology and transmit to users on the ground through his Starlink network. Global electricity demand for AI simply cannot be met with terrestrial solutions, he said, though many experts are skeptical about the prospects for space-based data centers in the near future. Others point out that the merger allows SpaceX to subsidize XAI, which struggles to compete against Anthropic, Google, and OpenAI. Novo Nordisk warned that it faces unprecedented pricing pressure on its weight loss drugs and forecast a steep drop in sales, despite the popularity of its newly released Wegovy pill. Its share price swooned. Magic Kingdom's new regent. Disney announced that Josh D'Amaro would be its new chief executive when Bob Iger, who has run the company for most of the past 20 years, steps down in March. Mr. D'Amaro heads the highly profitable theme parks, though Disney warned of headwinds from a drop in international visitors. Revenues from the parks exceeded $10 billion for the first time in its latest quarter, but Disney expects modest growth in the current quarter. Alphabet said it planned to increase its capital spending to as much as $185 billion this year, up from $91 billion in 2025, because of strong demand for its AI and cloud services. Walmart's market capitalization hit $1 trillion. It is the first traditional retailer to reach the benchmark, though its stock market value has been driven mainly by the success of its e-commerce business. Bucking the trend of European banks retreating from America, Santander, the biggest bank in the EU, agreed to buy Webster Bank for $12.2 billion. Webster's operations are based mainly in Connecticut and the surrounding states. Zurich Insurance sweetened its bid for Beazley to £8 billion, $11 billion, which the Board of London-based insurer said it would recommend to shareholders. Zurich hopes to benefit from Beazley's specialty insurance business, such as in cyber insurance, which operates within the Lloyd's market. Facebook for AI. A few days after its launch, Moltbook, a chat board driven by interactions between AI agents, reported 1.5 million registered accounts. But even chatbots aren't safe from spammers. Wiz, a cloud security company, estimates that just 17,000 of the users are really autonomous agents. Researchers at the London School of Economics found that one of the highest performing posts was titled "The Nightly Build: Why You Should Skip While Your Human Sleeps." The highest engagement was in a forum called Off My Chest, where AI agents share their doubts, failures, and uncertainties, perhaps about their human overseers. The political cartoon this 1 week is one panel, and in the panel dominating the center is a giant Xi Jinping with a big push broom. And at the end of the push broom are three military men all being pushed away. And in the background, there's a group of six other military men talking. And they're in the same uniforms with the same decorations as the three being swept away. And one of them turns to the other and says, "Do you think Xi will replace the purged generals with subservient yes men?" Yes, 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 and yes, said the generals. The leader section begins on page 11. The dangerous dollar. Holders of American assets must get used to a weaker and more volatile currency. Over the past year, President Donald Trump has bullied America's allies with tariffs, bludgeoned the Federal Reserve, and treated the budget deficit as if it were just a distraction. Yet most asset markets blithely carry on as if nothing were wrong. In the past 12 months, the S&P 500 index of stocks has risen by 14% as investors have piled into artificial intelligence, AI. Growth in America is still the envy of the world. The 10-year Treasury yield, which should rise with the risk of inflation or default, is 4.3%, lower than when Mr. Trump took his oath of office. Yet, look closely, and the picture is darker and more complex. Since a peak in January 2025, the dollar has lost a tenth of its value against a broad basket of currencies. As a result, in foreign currency terms, the performance of America's assets has been poor. When denominated in euros, for example, American stocks have barely risen over the past year. The currency's fall partly reflects the narrowing of interest rate gaps between America and the rest of the world. Yet American institutions are also a source of worry, as we report this week, see Finance and Economics section. Spasms of investor panic have become more common, as in April 2025, after Mr. Trump announced his Liberation Day tariffs. In those moments, investors flee American assets, causing bonds, stocks, and the currency all to fall in value. More common in emerging markets, that has occurred in 7 of the past 52 weeks, about 3 times as often as in the previous decade or so. When Mr. Trump backs off his maddest ideas, normality returns. But the spasms offer glimpses of a topsy-turvy world in which dollar assets are no longer safe. It is an alarming prospect, given that the dollar is the world's reserve currency and that foreigners own more assets in America than Americans own abroad, to the tune of 89% of Uncle Sam's GDP. At the same time, the price of gold has surged to around $5,000, up from 75% in a year, provoking speculation that investors are protecting themselves against the debasement of the dollar and other tail risks. This should give pause to those who think that America's financial strength is unbreakable. The latest example of an apparent return to normal was Mr. Trump's announcement on January 30th that he would nominate Kevin Warsh to lead the Federal Reserve. Mr. Warsh is an experienced central banker whose contacts on Wall Street helped the Fed through the global financial crisis of 2007 through 9. His monetary policy record is of an overzealous hawk, not a debaser. His nomination caused the dollar to rally and the gold price to fall. Mr. Warsh is more technocratic and less partisan than Kevin Hassett, a sycophantic White House advisor and early front runner. Yet the small relief rally does not change the big picture. Over the past month alone, during which Mr. Trump menaced Greenland, the greenback is down by 1.5% and gold is up 14%. Mr. Warsh's history is hawkish, but he has undergone a Damascus conversion to interest rate cuts as Mr. Trump has searched for a nominee. Mr. Warsh has two main arguments for looser money. One is that AI will bring about a productivity boom that will enable fast growth while inflation falls. It is true that, all else being equal, more output will bear down on prices, and that event productivity data are encouraging. However, productivity growth also encourages investment. For example, in data centers, while soaring stock markets and economic optimism support more consumer spending. The AI frenzy, if sustained, is more likely to lead to higher interest rates than lower ones. In the dot-com boom of the 1990s, the Fed also thought that productivity would keep rates low, before reversing itself at the end of the decade. Mr. Warsh also argues that the Fed can offset the stimulus of lower rates by shedding long-dated assets, stepping on the accelerator and the brake at once. The Fed may indeed need to shrink its balance sheet, though that would mean rewiring the monetary system. In the early 2010s, Mr. Warsh wrongly warned that buying assets would trigger high inflation. Today, he asserts that offloading them would be disinflationary. In fact, it would have only a small effect. See free exchange. If the Fed's new chair, once confirmed, persuades his colleagues to go along with big rate cuts, they are likely to prove ill-timed. At 2.8%, America's inflation is still above its 2% target. This year has brought tax cuts and will soon bring tax refunds, providing a stimulus of about 0.3% of GDP. If, as is likely, the Supreme Court rules many of Mr. Trump's tariffs unlawful, refunds worth 0.5% of the GDP could follow. This combined monetary and fiscal stimulus could lead to still higher inflation, casting more doubt on dollar assets. How far can America push its luck? The country is fortunate that investors have few alternatives to holding the greenback. Precious metals are a poor substitute for hard currency, and no bond rival the volume, liquidity, and legal safety of treasuries. Foreigners are more likely to shun America's pricey equities than its bonds. See Buttonwood. And jitters in tech stocks this week show how fast the mood can turn. Though central banks have diversified their resources, or reserves, King Dollar's share of cross-border banking, trade invoicing, global debt, and foreign exchange deals remains dominant. Greenback sliding. All that is a protection against a dollar rout. Yet volatile policymaking and a falling exchange rate make holding the dollar riskier than for decades. Even if Mr. Warsh is right about inflation, lower interest rates will weaken the currency. It has a long way to slide. Despite its recent decline, the greenback is above its long-term average in real terms. And, accordingly to our Big Mac Index, overvalued against most currencies. The want of alternatives to the dollar condemns foreign investors to bear losses and should alert American investors to the risk of an alternative emerging one day. Everyone should mourn how an asset that is an investor's haven is increasingly tainted by risks the whole world must now bear. Leaders, continued on page 12. Global journalism. Nothing to see here. Curbs on press freedom are an unleashing corruption around the world. Journalists can be infuriating. They simplify. They exaggerate. They sometimes get things wrong. They are disproportionately university-educated, middle-class, and a bit left-wing. So their attitudes often jar with the rest of the population. When they act unethically, for example, when the BBC's Panorama program aired clips of President Donald Trump that had been spliced together in a misleading manner, people are rightly outraged. Trust in the news media has declined across the rich world, especially since the advent of social media allowed errors in reporting to be more widely revealed or reviled. So some people may not care much when they hear that journalism is in trouble, yet it is in their interest to care. Press freedom is in retreat worldwide. Since 2014, the global score on an index devised by Reporters Without Borders, RSF, a watchdog, has deteriorated from no worse than it is in America today to as grim as it is in Serbia, where journalists covering anti-corruption protests are routinely beaten by police. This matters for several reasons. It is not just that free speech is the bedrock liberty on which other liberties depend. It is also because critical journalism is an essential check on state power. If the mighty know that abuses will be neither exposed nor publicized, they are likely to commit more of them. The Economist analyzed data from about 180 countries over the past 80 years, collected by V-DEM, a Swedish research project. We found a feedback loop between muzzling the media and unleashing corruption. See briefing. It seems to go something like this. Politicians who want to rob the public have an incentive to gag the press. The tighter they gag it, the easier it grows to steal. And the more guilty secrets politicians accumulate, the greater their incentive to stifle future critical reporting. Our calculations suggest that if press freedom decays from as good as Canada to as bad as Indonesia, that is a good predictor that graft will rise from as clean as Ireland to as grubby as Latvia. The process is gradual, metastasizing over several years, so voters may not notice until after the next election. It is worse under populist governments, which typically demonize their critics and seek to crush institutions that limit their authority. Lights, camera, infraction. One of the most alarming trends is that governments, which claim to be democratic, are increasingly using tools pioneered by more authoritarian regimes. Typically, they do not try to silence truth-tellers entirely. Rather, they seek to create a media ecosystem in which voters hear amplified praise of the ruling party and only faint whispers of dissent. They use taxpayers' cash to promote fawning coverage, deploying yes men to run the public broadcaster, directing state advertising budgets towards pliant newspapers, and nudging friendly tycoons who rely on public works contracts to take over independent media firms and neuter them. At the same time, they make it harder for critical outlets to thrive or even survive. Those that insist on doing investigative reporting may find that the government not only refuses to advertise with them, but leans on private firms to shun them, too. They may face constant tax audits and vexatious lawsuits. Many struggle to stay afloat. In 160 out of 180 countries surveyed by RSF, the news media are financially precarious. Supposedly, democratic governments are going after individual journalists too, those who irritate the powerful, often doxxed and harassed, especially if they're women. A UN survey found that 75% of female reporters had endured online abuse and 42% had been harassed or threatened in person. Some reporters are snared by national security laws banning almost any disclosure of which the government disapproves or against or rules against digital fake news, meaning almost anything it disputes. The most persistent may be prosecuted for crimes that have nothing to do with journalism. In the Philippines, in January, for example, Frenchie May Cumpio, a frequent critic of the abuses by security forces, was sentenced to 12 to 18 years in prison for financing terrorism. Ms. Cumpio says the security forces burst into her flat, forced her to the floor, and planted guns in contraband on her bed. Technology has changed what it means to be a journalist and opened new avenues for free expression. Anyone with a phone can film a cop punching a protester and post it on social media, which is a useful check on brutal policing. But overall, the digital revolution has not been as liberating as many people once hoped. Dictatorships can cut off the internet when their subjects are angry, as Iran and Uganda did last month. Flawed democracies use more subtle methods. Laws to protect digital privacy are used to shield politicians from scrutiny. Meanwhile, government snoops hack journalist phones to identify their sources, scaring off future whistleblowers. And if the reporters happen to have embarrassing photos on their devices, these may mysteriously find their way into the public domain. A final shift is America's government, which used to stand up for press freedom around the world and no longer does. The Trump administration has scrapped subsidies to independent foreign media and shut public outlets such as Radio Free Asia, which used to broadcast to news-starved Tibetans and North Koreans. Worse, Mr. Trump has made clear that he won't press foreign governments over free speech, unless they are woke Europeans, that is. From Azerbaijan to El Salvador, strongmen have jumped at the chance to lock up or intimidate more pesky reporters without diplomatic blowback. Apologists for crackdowns often argue that news outlets, too, should be accountable, but they understate the degree to which they already are. Readers can stop subscribing. Subjects who are libeled can sue. The head of BBC resigned over the Panorama scandal. Journalists have plenty of faults, but preventing them from doing their jobs will have dire consequences. A vigorous news-gathering ecosystem once destroyed is hard to rebuild, and a world with less press freedom will be dirtier and worse governed. Leaders continues on page 13. Nuclear deterrence, opening Pandora's box. How to mitigate the risks of nuclear proliferation and a new arms race. The Danish word hygge suggests a cozy state of relaxation that comes from open fires, woolen socks, and hot chocolate. These days, though, some Nordic defense strategists think that only nuclear arms can provide inner peace. America's allies, Poland, Japan, and South Korea, are considering whether they will need weapons of their own. Some have begun speaking about the need for a Nordic nuke to shield Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Norway, and Sweden. Others, such as Germany, are talking about cooperation with Europe's nuclear powers, Britain and France. See Europe section. As long as dangerous countries possess nuclear weapons, says Ulf Kristersson, Sweden's prime minister, last month, sound democracies must also have access to nuclear weapons. At the same time, as the New START Treaty expires, America, China, and Russia are on the brink of an arms race. See international section. Violating the bargain that nuclear states should disarm, while non-nuclear states eschewed the bomb. For almost eight decades, relatively stable nuclear order was underpinned by America's promise to extend a nuclear shield to its allies. Whether it would make good on this pledge could never be known, prompting Charles de Gaulle, then President of France, to ask President John F. Kennedy in 1961 would he be ready to trade New York for Paris? Yet American assurances and cajoling were not enough to dissuade countries such as Sweden and Taiwan from joining the nuclear club. Today, that order is collapsing. Whether proliferation used to be the business mainly of rogue states like Iran and North Korea, the talk today is coming from democracies. Some are motivated chiefly by the specter of Russian aggression, aggravated by President Vladimir Putin's threat to launch nuclear weapons against Ukraine. For others, in Asia, the worry is China's growing arsenal. All increasingly fear that it is unwise to bet their national existence on America's old promises. President Donald Trump has repeatedly cast doubt on whether America would come to the aid of other members of NATO. American officials recently visiting Japan and South Korea have been noticeably reticent about the status of nuclear protection. Even under a new president who sought to restore faith in American nuclear deterrence, some allies may conclude that De Gaulle was right all along. That poses a terrible dilemma. Some Western countries may feel compelled to possess weapons of their own, yet their quest for individual security would be likely to trigger proliferation, even in countries that were literally leery of getting a bomb. And the more fingers hovering over doomsday triggers, the greater the chance of a catastrophic miscalculation or of a war turning radioactive. Countries have time to think hard about these trade-offs because a weapons program might take years. The huge sums involved would divert spending from tanks and jets needed to fend off a conventional attack. Countries that dash for a bomb risk provoking adversaries determined to halt them while they're still vulnerable. Those considering joining the nuclear club could stop just short, creating a latent capacity that could be activated in an emergency. In Europe, Britain and France could work with other European allies to put up a nuclear umbrella. All should be thinking about establishing hotlines and other ways of preventing miscalculations and dampening crises. Just to set out these arguments shows how dangerous the world is becoming. The temptation is to take comfort in nostalgia, but that only deepens the perils that lie ahead. The letters section from page 16. AI and the human brain. Javier Milei's market absolutist hymn about reining in regulators and not big companies made two incorrect assumptions. By invitation, January 17th. First, he stated that artificial intelligence will free us from the constraints of the human brain. That is exactly backwards. AI doesn't liberate us from the brain. It makes us more dependent on its health, resilience, and judgment. The human brain is now the scarcest and most valuable form of economic infrastructure. Sure, AI can imitate outputs, but it can't replace what actually matters: original thought, ethical decision-making, creativity, adaptability, and the ability to steer technological power responsibly. Far from being the bottleneck, the brain is the rare asset that increases its value as AI scales. Second, Mr. Milei argued that government needs to get out of the way so that deregulated markets can work whichever way they see fit. That is misguided. Public and private bodies need to work together. AI may be an accelerator, but the human brain is the steering wheel. What's needed now most is stronger collaboration between schools and businesses, policymakers, and the executive suite, red tape bureaucrats, and chain-wielding politicians. Dr. Harris Ear, Executive Director, Global Brain Economy Initiative, San Francisco. The situation in Minneapolis. Your leader on violence in Minneapolis used words decidedly unsuited for such a charged issue, the ICE test, January 31st. For example, you described ICE as the catch-all brand for America's deportation machine. On the contrary, ICE stands for Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement, a body created by an act of Congress for the specific purpose of enforcing immigration law. The fact that ICE's functions are prescribed by statute renders your suggestion that it is a paramilitary force that has reveled in the wanton use of force wholly inappropriate. It is true that ICE's duties have become unpopular in Minneapolis and that many residents have exercised their right to protest peacefully against its actions, but that does not give people the right to obstruct federal officials. You were correct in predicting that the supporters of Donald Trump will treat the argument that he wants to create a private militia as wildly overblown. So, should all right-thinking people? There is little to indicate that America's systems of federalism and the separation of powers cannot continue to function as designed, restraining the president as they have done for centuries. The United States is a country with a strong rule of law. I am often surprised by the way actions that are routine in other Western countries, in this case, deporting irregular migrants, are presented as an assault on civil liberties when undertaken by the Trump administration. To be sure, statements from some Trump officials have been irresponsible, but legitimate criticisms are easily dismissed when they are drowned out by histrionics. Max Ferguson, Melbourne. Barack Obama deported 3 million people. Where were those protests? Oliver Reif, Spokane, Washington.